All right, listener name. Let's dive into this behemoth. The EYFS statutory framework for group and school-based providers.
Yeah.
We're talking...
It's a big one.
Oh, it's a monster. It really is. We're talking the nitty-gritty of early years education in England.
Nitty-gritty.
But while everyone knows it's important, I have a feeling you're digging deeper than just the ABCs and 123s of it all.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So, ready to unearth some less obvious gems from this document.
Yeah, I'm all for uncovering those hidden treasures.
Okay, so we know this document is the rule book, but it's way more detailed than just saying keep the kids safe and teach them stuff. For example, did you know there's an actual square footage requirement per child? And it changes depending on whether you're dealing with a room full of toddlers or one with preschoolers.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's fascinating how specific it gets.
Yeah.
It really highlights, I think, just how much thought goes into, you know, designing a safe and stimulating environment for these little ones. Imagine trying to arrange a space to meet those regulations. It's like a real-life game of Tetris.
You're telling me. And speaking of specifics, let's talk staff-to-child ratios.
Okay.
We all know they exist, but get this. Having a highly qualified staff member is like having a superpower.
Yeah.
They can handle more kids, which seems great for flexibility, but also puts a lot of responsibility on their shoulders.
That's such an important point to raise because it makes you question then the balance between providing really high quality care and potentially overburdening staff.
Mm-hmm.
So where do we draw the line?
Exactly. And that's something this document really makes you think about. Now brace yourself, because
yeah.
This next part surprised me. The document doesn't just say staff need first aid. It outlines the specific syllabus and certification required for pediatric first aid training.
Wow.
Have you ever encountered a situation where this level of detail in the framework would have been crucial?
It really makes you appreciate the weight of responsibility placed on early years providers, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Knowing that they are equipped to handle those high-pressure situations can be really reassuring, but it also highlights the need for ongoing support and training for those individuals.
Absolutely. And speaking of support, there's a whole section dedicated to staff suitability.
Yeah.
We're not just talking about loving kids here. This document goes deep on background checks.
It's interesting, isn't it? The document explicitly states those checks should also extend to anyone who has lived or worked abroad.
It's like they've thought of everything, which in a way they have to, right?
Yeah.
They're responsible for the safety and well-being of some of the most vulnerable members of society.
It's a huge responsibility.
Huge.
And this document really drives that point home.
It does. And it goes beyond just background checks. This framework lays out a whole framework for ensuring staff are suitable.
And it's not just a one-time thing either, is it? The emphasis on continuous professional development ensures practitioners are staying up to date and equipped to handle the, you know, the ever-evolving landscape of early childhood education.
It's like they're building a safety net, layer by layer, to make sure nothing falls through the cracks.
Yeah.
But let's not forget, this document is about more than just keeping children safe. It's also about fostering their development.
And that's where those seven key areas of learning and development come in. This framework breaks down those crucial early learning experiences into, you know, into digestible chunks, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're not just talking about the usual suspects like literacy and numeracy. This document delves into the importance of personal, social, and emotional development, communication and language, you know, things that lay the foundation for a child's overall well-being and future success.
It's about nurturing those well-rounded individuals, those little people that are ready to take on the world.
Exactly. So how about we unpack those seven areas a bit further? I'm particularly interested in how this document approaches things like creativity and the expressive arts.
Excellent point, because those are often overlooked or perhaps not given the same weight as, say, more traditional academic subjects.
Right.
So let's see what treasures we can uncover there. You know, it's fascinating how this document approaches expressive arts. It's not just about, you know, giving kids finger paints and glitter glue.
Right. It goes way deeper than that.
Exactly. This document emphasizes the importance of providing rich and varied experiences that allow children to explore, you know, different materials, media, and techniques.
Mm-hmm. It's like they're trying to ignite that creative spark early on, encouraging children to think outside the box and express themselves in unique and meaningful ways. It reminds me of that quote from Picasso. Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once he grows up. This document seems to be tackling that head on.
I love that. And you know what? It's not just about the arts themselves, right? The framework highlights how creativity and expressive arts actually contribute to a child's development in other areas as well.
Oh, absolutely. Like when a child is experimenting with different materials and textures, they're not just exploring their artistic side, they're also developing their fine motor skills.
Exactly. And when they're engaged in imaginative play, they're strengthening their language and communication skills, their problem-solving abilities, their social-emotional understanding.
It's amazing how interconnected it all is, right?
It really is. And that's something this document does a fantastic job of highlighting, the holistic nature of child development. It's not about compartmentalizing these areas of learning, but rather recognizing how they all intertwine and build upon each other.
So it's not enough to just focus on those core academic skills you need to foster the whole child.
Precisely. And speaking of fostering the whole child, let's talk about the role of play in this document.
Ah, yes. Play, the cornerstone of early childhood. I'm curious, what kind of insights does this document offer on that front? Does it go beyond just saying, let them play?
It absolutely does. It recognizes that play is not just about having fun, although that's certainly a crucial part of it. This document emphasizes that play is actually the primary way young children learn and make sense of the world around them.
It's like their own little research lab, right? Where they can test out ideas, experiment with different roles, and learn through trial and error.
Exactly. And the document encourages practitioners to create those rich and stimulating environments where children are free to explore, experiment, and just be themselves.
But it's not a complete free-for-all, right? There's still structure and guidance woven into those play experiences.
Absolutely. This framework emphasizes a balance between child-led and adult-guided play. So while children are encouraged to follow their own interests and explore at their own pace, practitioners are still very much involved.
So it's about creating that delicate dance between providing structure and fostering independence. What I find interesting is that it seems to recognize that the balance shifts as children grow and develop.
Exactly. As children progress through the EYFS, the framework suggests incorporating more structured learning opportunities, especially in those specific areas like literacy and mathematics.
Which makes sense, right? As they get closer to that transition to primary school, they need to be prepared for a more formal learning environment.
Absolutely. But even then, this document stresses the importance of maintaining a playful and engaging approach to learning.
Because, let's face it, who wants to sit through a boring lesson, right? Especially those little ones who are just bursting with energy and curiosity.
Exactly. This framework reminds us that learning should be joyful and engaging, regardless of a child's age. And that brings us to another important aspect of this document, assessment. It's one thing to have these learning goals, but how do we know if they're actually being met?
And how does this document address that without putting too much pressure on these young learners? Because let's be real, testing a 5-year-old's math skills doesn't really scream joyful learning, does it?
You've hit the nail on the head. That's where the EYFS framework really shines. It takes a much more holistic and, dare I say, humane approach to assessment. It's less about standardized tests and more about observation, documentation, and really understanding each child's individual learning journey.
So it's less about labeling kids and more about meeting them where they're at.
Precisely. The framework emphasizes ongoing assessment throughout a child's early years journey, beginning with the progress check at age 2.
Ah, yes, the progress check. It's like a midpoint check-in, right?
Yeah.
A chance to pause and reflect on a child's development and adjust the approach if needed.
Exactly. And it's all about open communication between practitioners and parents working together to support each child's individual needs.
It sounds like they've really thought about how to make assessments, you know?
Yeah.
A useful tool for supporting learning rather than just a way to measure performance.
Exactly. And that's particularly important when we consider the transition from early years education to primary school.
Right. Because that's a big leap for those little ones.
It is. And that's where the Reception Baseline Assessment, or RBA, comes in.
Okay.
It's this fascinating tool that's designed to provide a snapshot of a child's development right at the start of their reception year.
So it's less about testing specific knowledge and more about getting a baseline for each child.
Precisely. Think of it as a starting point for their primary school journey. And the interesting thing is, the data collected isn't used to track individual children's progress.
Wait, really? That is surprising.
I know. It's actually used to measure the progress of that entire cohort, all those children starting school together as they move through the system.
Oh, so it's more about assessing the effectiveness of the education system itself rather than labeling individual children.
You got it. It's about identifying any trends or areas where schools might need additional support or resources.
That makes a lot of sense. It's about taking a bird's eye view of the education landscape and making those data-driven decisions to improve the experience for all children.
And this document goes to great lengths to outline how this data should and shouldn't be used.
Right.
They emphasize protecting individual children's privacy, which is critical.
It's reassuring to know they're taking that ethical responsibility seriously. And speaking of responsibility, this document is full of reminders about the importance of collaboration in early years education.
It's more than just a reminder, it's woven into the very fabric of this framework. You know, they emphasize the value of building strong partnerships, not just between practitioners and parents, but also with other professionals who play a role in a child's life.
It really does take a village, doesn't it?
Absolutely. From healthcare providers and social workers to specialists who can provide tailored support, this document encourages a team approach to meeting each child's unique needs.
At the heart of it all is communication. This document stresses the importance of open and frequent dialogue between practitioners and parents.
And not just one-way communication either. They emphasize the importance of practitioners actively listening to and valuing the insights and perspectives of parents.
Because at the end of the day, no one knows a child better than their own parents.
Right, exactly. And this document recognizes that it encourages a true partnership where practitioners and parents work together to create the best possible learning experience for each child.
So, listener name, there you have it. A deep dive into the depths of the EYFS statutory framework. We've explored the ins and outs of staff qualifications, the importance of safety and well-being, the complexities of assessment, and the crucial role of play-based learning.
And through it all, we've seen how this document emphasizes the individuality of each child, advocating for a child-centered approach that values their unique needs and experiences.
It's been quite a journey, and we've only just scratched the surface. This document is packed with insights, and we encourage you to dive in and explore further.
Because ultimately, the most rewarding discoveries are often the ones we make ourselves. What stood out to you most from our conversation today? What questions does it spark for you about early childhood education?
Keep those questions simmering, listener name. And until next time, happy learning.